One of the most powerful storms on record in the Gulf of Mexico is threatening the entire panhandle of Florida. And Paul, when you hear people in that area who 11 days ago were affected by Hurricane Helene, and you've seen perhaps a video of all the debris stacked along roadways in front of businesses and homes, now there's a race to clean that up so that it doesn't become projectiles and inflict further damage when the winds hit.
All this work is exhausting. Sandbagging, debris removal, that last minute running around you need to do. And there are people, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people have been asked to evacuate away from the coastline.
And you've seen the highways are just absolutely jammed bumper to bumper. They're running out of gasoline in some areas. They're running out of food staples too. We're going to check in the next half hour with a friend and journalist who lives in Tampa. He's there. He tried to go to the store last night. And just as an example, his kids are evacuating. He's going to hunker down. He's not in a mandatory zone. And we'll get an update from meteorologist Joe Lundberg on the latest coming up.
And as long as we're talking about meteorology, this is CBS's Lonnie Quinn on Milton.
All eyes are on Tampa, Florida. If it goes just north of Tampa, that would put all the storm surge into Tampa and Tampa Bay. The water has nowhere to go. It's like taking a gallon of water and pouring it into a Dixie cup. You're going to fill it up, and then it's just going to bubble up and bubble up and bubble up. For everybody in that area, if this holds true, it's the worst storm you have ever seen.
And that's really what we're hearing. So Tampa's airport's closing at 9 this morning.
Mm-hmm.
St. Pete Clearwater closing. Orlando closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Miami, Jacksonville, and Fort Lauderdale airports will remain open, at least for now. So if you have flights headed that direction, obviously you want to stay close to your carrier.
Yeah, a friend of mine and I were on the phone yesterday. She was planning to head down to Florida later this week and do some work down in the Orlando area, Central Florida, and she's, of course, canceled those plans. I have friends in Melbourne, Jacksonville, friends over in the Sarasota-Bradenton area with a home there that their summer home right now is in Latrobe. I don't know if there are any of us that work up here that don't have at least one connection in Florida right now. Ron Cook, one of our friends who just retired, is living in Fort Myers. He just moved down there just not too long ago.
Yeah, Joe Starkey from The Fan, who's a writer for the Post-Gazette, also contacted Ron and, very concerned. So we have so many connections, especially Pirates and spring training, and that's how I really discovered that beautiful area in Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. So our
both of which, by the way, were there's a lot of damage,
a lot of debris,
from Helene. That moved the huge chunks of the beach right over the road and into homes and businesses.
Yeah, most of that due to the surge, as opposed to wind damage. Although there are some, but there's concern that the wind damage here might be more intense, and a direct hit on Tampa would be, you hate to use the word catastrophic, but I think that's what we're looking at in the region. So our thoughts and prayers with everybody there. Meanwhile, Sarah Innamorato, Allegheny County Executive, Marty Griffin, as you heard with Paul at the top of the newscast, suggesting a 46.5% tax increase, on properties? That's how they're going to make up a shortfall of what they project to be nearly $80 million.
Our David Ballarato caught up with Sarah Innamorato at a ceremony yesterday, a groundbreaking, and asked her about this, and she wouldn't confirm specifically any numbers, but she did tell him that the county's facing tough times. The last time they had a millage increase was back in 2012. Here's her comment.
Our costs at the county have gone up just like everyone else's, and the county is being asked to do more and more.
And so the official word should come today when Sarah proposes her first budget as Allegheny County Executive.
I guess that comes around 5 o'clock tonight or thereabout.
Yes. And a diversion from reality. A hockey night in Pittsburgh tomorrow. The Pens open the season at PPG Paints against the New York Rangers. They got down to their season roster and are ready to go with, of course, Captain Sidney Crosby, no longer Sid the Kid, Sid the Mid, middle-aged man. But what a talent and what an honor to still have Sid as part of the organization.
And there are some new faces on the team this year. Very young faces.
So we'll see how it goes tomorrow night again. 7:30 face-off at PPG Paints. And that's up. We'll go live to Tampa, Florida, as the evacuation of hundreds of thousands of people continues. And we'll check in with meteorologist Joe Lundberg. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Paul Rasmussen. Paul, I saw a post from Liv Dunn, the girlfriend of Paul Skeens, the Pirates pitching rookie of the year, phenom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it said, we have a new recruit. And it shows Paul down at LSU on the trampoline, on the balance beam. He looks completely human.
Oh, boy.
And out of place.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Out of place, right?
It's kind of fun. We'll repost it so you can see that. That said, as we put a exclamation point in the Pirates season, getting ready for the Pens to open tomorrow, there was action yesterday.
There was action yesterday in front of the city county building, a protest about the Pirates.
This is Pittsburgh. We're the city of champions. We have the Penguins and the Steelers who want to win. They win. I feel like as the city of Pittsburgh, we deserve better.
That is one of the twin brothers who were protesting, Canyon and Carter Schwartz. Basically, they're frustrated by the team's performance in the last few seasons. They want to see changes, starting with the owner, Bob Nutting.
We think that it could be better, and we want it to be better. And since nothing else is working and nothing has changed since the 20 years that he has been owner, we decided to let our voices be known.
And here is his brother, Canyon.
He's fine with just us being bad, and they want us to be fine with being bad.
There it is.
I don't know what they actually hope will happen. Are they asking the city to, what can you do?
Yeah. You know, one thing that could be said that I don't know for sure that this is the number, but there has been a very big success for the Pirates, and that is the value of the team has appreciated tremendously. The last estimate I saw was it's worth more than $1 billion.
God.
So whether or not they're winning, is irrelevant in terms of the value of it. It's as an investment. It's been a very handsome investment for Bob Nutting.
Yeah, he doesn't want to give that up, probably. I mean,
who would?
It's the same story every year. It gets frustrating. But Paul Skeens, the huge highlight.
I got to see these pictures, by the way.
I just sent this and reposted it.
Okay.
And Aaron's going to share it with you too.
Paul Skeens on a balance beam, man. That's got to look
great.
Like
he's doing all this stuff. You see these women. Well, his girlfriend is a goat now in college sports by being able to run the apparatus. Wow, this is hilarious. is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with our anchorman Paul Rasmussen, and we continue to watch Hurricane Milton in the Gulf of Mexico, and we go now live to Tampa, Florida, where the storm is supposed to make landfall sometime late tomorrow night into the early hours on Thursday. A journalist and friend, and on this night where we're going to recognize our hometown heroes, he's one of our past recipients of a Lifetime Hero Award, Mike Gallagher, originally from Pittsburgh Central Catholic, spent much of his career in Erie, now lives in Tampa. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Well, we're worried about you guys, seeing the intensity of the storm, knowing you just dealt with Helene, which really hit Tampa hard, and now the evacuations are underway, and I understand your own children have left, and you're hunkering down, right? You're not in the mandatory evacuation zone, but many people have decided to leave anyway, right?
Right. My kids got on the road. They're driving home to Pittsburgh, actually, as we speak. But where I'm at, they zoned it. I'm in Zone D. Zones A, B, and C have been evacuated. So I'm kind of on the cusp, so I'm hoping we do well. But it was just, I mean, it's just been crazy. I mean, and I've been through a few storms here. And like you talked about Helene, That was 200 miles offshore. It never touched the shore, and it did all that damage. It did billions of dollars damage, and it never got here. It was 200 miles away when it went up through the Gulf. So this thing with a direct hit could be just a disaster for and the one thing I heard one of our local meteorologists point out is the last time we had a storm even similar to this was 1921. 125,000 people lived in the Tampa metro area. Now we're trying to evacuate 3 million who live here.
Yeah, boy, Mike, this is really an ominous-looking storm. I guess the one hopeful thing about it right now is it looks like it's going to be Category 3 by the time it reaches landfall.
Yeah, they're saying that because of the wind shear, and that's the one thing you learn living in Florida, you become your own meteorologist. You start understanding millibars and wind shears and things I never wanted to have to learn about. But, yeah, they are saying it should weaken. But the whole thing with Tampa will be that storm surge. Like, even the airport has water around three sides of it. And when that water gets pushed into the bay, it just has nowhere to go. And one of our local meteorologists described it as take a Dixie cup, now pour 10 gallons of water into that cup and see what it looks like. That's what happens when a surge like this comes into Tampa Bay.
We're with Mike Gallagher in Tampa. So, Mike, after Helene, and we saw what they tried to do to save the hospital in Tampa with this aqua wall, and they were one of the few businesses, in this case, a nonprofit trying to save lives, had this kind of technology. Now, people don't have time. I mean, you can't possibly prepare for a 10 to 15-foot surge.
No, not only that, but even where I'm at, I'm away from surge, you know, disaster potential, at least I'm hoping. But you start thinking about it. If a Category 5 eye wall goes right through where I'm at, 5 miles as the crow flies to the Gulf of Mexico, you start looking around your house and say, okay, what am I grabbing? If I can grab a handful of things or a small car load or whatever I'm grabbing, what is it you're taking? Look around your house today. What if you think that there's a chance that nothing's going to be left, what are you taking with you? Obviously, people go first, but is it that picture of your parents? Is it, you know, that James Conner's game helmet from his ACC championship season? You know, it means a lot to us, and I'm just watching it for him. Is that one of the things I grab? And my son says, yeah, you better grab it because you might have to put it on.
And, you know, that's... Man, that's you're a microcosm of what so many people are thinking and going through.
Well, that's the other thing, Larry, is just imagine. Look at all the people you know in Pittsburgh. You couldn't count them. Well, now you're all talking about going through the same disaster. They're all going to be in the same situation you're in. So, you know, if you have a disaster that happens in a neighborhood, it's, oh my gosh, we can all pull together and go help this neighborhood. But now you're talking about, you know, an area where the population is over 3 million people that are all going to be hit with the same thing. So who do you feel bad for first? Yourself? Them? Kids? What? I don't know.
You were at the store last night trying to just get staples. What was that like?
It was, I'm trying to get other essentials. There's no bread. It's cleaned out. And I give credit to these people at Walmart who are working. Who, you know, they're not running for their lives. They're there trying to serve me, and we're treating them like they're, you know, crap. Hey, I need this. I need that. And the other one was gas. When my kids left, they went to 17 gas stations to find gas. And some of them they went into, people were fighting over the gas out in front of the pumps because people were filling their gas cans for their generators, and other people are saying, no, you need to share some of that. And they're arguing back and forth. And it's like an apocalyptic, you know, time. And I've been through these. Well, people tell me we'll be okay. This one has people who always say that we'll be okay in the hurricane saying, uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Mike, how are you set up, by the way? How are your preparations?
We have, you know, the big lawn furniture is in the pool because the theory being it won't get blown away in the pool. So you throw all that in the pool, you board up what you can, you bring everything inside, loose objects. And that's the other problem with this hurricane, is we have a lot of neighbors who still have piles of debris in their front yard from Helene 2 weeks ago. So now that neighborhood next to us that did get affected last hurricane has all that material that's going to, one, be a projectile, and is just going to add to whatever disaster that this creates. So it's just an absolute mess. But I'm hoping, I'm watching a dog for my son's friend, because the shelters couldn't keep the dogs. And my son's friend was out of town, and the shelter called and said, you got to come get your dog. We're shutting down. We can't keep the dog. So we went and got the dog. And it's those little things that you don't think of. That, okay, I got my dog at the shelter because I'm going here. Well, now the shelter's closing. Now all the gas stations are closed. Now I can't use an ATM. Now I can't, and then you tell everybody, don't panic if you can't get me tomorrow or Thursday, because the phones and the power will probably be out. And if you're thinking your power's going to be out for a week or two, what are you doing? Are you buying box cereal? Think about it. You won't be able to cook, do anything for who knows how long. And it isn't like you can go to your neighbor's house, because they're in the same situation you are.
Well, appreciate you taking some time for us this morning, Mike.
I appreciate you guys. And you might be seeing me sooner than later. I might be a Pittsburgher again real soon. And, they always joke with me down here about all the snow I deal with in Erie, PA. How do you deal with that? You know how we deal with it? We wait for it to melt. I have hot cocoa, light a fire, wait for it to melt, and I'm good. I've never once had a snowstorm in Erie, PA threaten to try and move me to Canada in one gust of wind. That's the reality of what this is. But this one is scary. We're praying for the best, and, appreciate all the support that we're all getting from people around the country.
All right, Michael. God bless, brother. We'll keep in touch.
All right, Larry. Thanks.
That was not easy.
And just their preparations for this massive storm, and wanted to get the latest from you.
Well, the top winds mercifully have come down. Instead of being 180 miles per hour like they were last evening, they're only, quote-unquote, 155 miles per hour. It just means that it's not as powerful as it once was, but it is still an extremely, extremely dangerous hurricane. And the transformation that it's undergoing at this hour, it's basically replacing its eye wall. And that's something that happens in a lot of these big hurricanes, these strong hurricanes. And it's going to mean that the wind field is going to expand. So whereas you might have had the hurricane force winds in a very small area, you'll have them in a bigger area going forward. Same thing for the tropical storm force winds, which just means that pretty much most of the Florida Peninsula is going to be bracing for destructive winds and power outages from this system as it expands in size here over the next 24 hours.
Joe, it looks to me, and maybe you can straighten me out if I'm not right on this, but it looks to me like rain is going to be the least of the worries. It's going to be storm surge first and wind second.
I think that's right. Storm surge, certainly in the Tampa area down to maybe Fort Myers, probably 10 to 15 feet. In some of the worst hit areas, it could be 15 to 20 feet. You're just going to be piling that water in from the west and southwest for a couple of tide cycles without it having an opportunity to escape. And then as the storm goes by, you still have a west to northwest wind behind it. So you might even have a third tide cycle where the water just can't escape before finally it can go out.
Larry Richard with our anchor man, Paul
Rasmussen.
It's
hard to imagine being
yesterday,
there,
Joe. As
I can't
know,
either.
The wake
I just,
Hamas
I can't.
Is brutal October 7th, 2023 attack. The worst massacre meantime. Of Jews since the Holocaust.
I appreciate the update, and we'll be in
the
touch.
American
okay, take
Jewish
care.
Committee.
Meteorologist Joe Lundberg
has
at
mobilized in
650
globally to fight anti-Semitism. And joining us is Hillary Levine, Associate Director of AGC in the Philadelphia and New Jersey area. Hillary, appreciate your time this morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It was hard to watch yesterday because there were, as you know, a lot of stories related to what happened a year ago on October 7th. I can't imagine from your standpoint reliving that nightmare and all that's happened a year and a day since. What is your message to people who are listening, where we have a very strong Jewish community here, as you know?
Thank you. You're absolutely right. It's been an excruciating and devastating year. And exactly like you said, yesterday we sort of remembered, but lived through it once again. And I have to say, for those of us living in the Jewish diaspora, and especially for Israelis, we've often said that we're still living in October 8th, 2023. For this entire year, it's just felt like October 8th. We can't really move on. While there's still hostages being held in Gaza, while Israelis can't go back to their homes in the north and south of the country, while there's still war and people can't live in peace and security. And frankly, right after October 7th happened, anti-Semitism just skyrocketed here in the United States and around the world. So what I would say is, as this just continues, we truly can't move on fully.
What do you think is the biggest misconception? Why would you imagine that would be the case, that after October 7th, anti-Semitism has, as you said, skyrocketed?
That's a great question. After October 7th, and of course, Israel immediately launched its war of self-defense against Hamas, and now, of course, Hezbollah as well, it seemed to give people, again, here in the U.S. around the world, some sort of a pass to act violently and hatefully, both verbally and physically, to the Jewish community. From the way I see it, often feelings of anti-Zionism are truly just an excuse for anti-Semitism, for acts of anti-Semitism. And of course, there's absolutely no excuse. It's just truly been a devastating and a frightening time to be Jewish. But you know what? On the other side of that coin, the Jewish people are a resilient people, and we have a lot of hope and strength, and that's sort of what's brought us forward to this day.
And what do you say when people, and you've heard the protests, say that we've got to stop these wars in the Middle East? This has been going on really for thousands of years, these battles. But in the real world we are in today, how do we make a change?
So October 7th happened, Israel didn't ask for this war. This is truly just a war of self-defense. If Hamas laid down its weapons, if there was a deal to bring the hostages home, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. We need to get to a place where both peoples, Israelis and Palestinians, can live in peace and security, and that Israeli citizens don't no longer have to live in daily fear of rockets devastating their lives and terrorizing themselves. We can't live like this anymore. We have to get to a place where there's some sort of a deal.
This is the Big K Morning Show, and every Tuesday at this time, as of last week, the following is brought to you by Independence Health System, expert care here, and we will feature a medical professional each and every week. And today, Dr. Sharon Goldstein joins us via our video mix. You can see Good Doctor at kdkradio.com while hearing her on the radio. Doctor, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Larry.
And Dr. Goldstein is the medical director of the Breast Health Center in the Westmoreland area. And October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, as many people are aware, what a lot of people might not be aware of, that breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women, exceeded only by skin cancer. I'm actually surprised skin cancer is that prominent, Doctor.
Yeah, yeah. Probably a mixture of genetics and our exposure to UV light.
And by the numbers, the second leading cause of cancer death in women is breast cancer, exceeded only by lung cancer. So I think a lot of women, obviously, this is top of mind. especially this month. So let's start with a baseline, and fortunately, death rates are declining because of advanced screening. So when should a woman begin the screening process for breast cancer?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because that is something of a moving target. So the United States Protective Services Task Force, the USPSTF, recently did change their recommendations, but most of us in the breast cancer world prefer that women start their screening, average risk women start their screening at the age of 40, and then get yearly mammograms thereafter. Different groups, the American College of Radiology, the American College of Surgeons, the American Society of Breast Surgeons, we are interested in screening women throughout their lifetime after the age of 40, and that's even in older women. But there are screening guidelines from other organizations that ask for people to stop screening at the age of 74, but that is not my thinking.
And what do you think, Doc?
I think that all women need to be getting a mammogram after the age of 40. And the exception to that would be younger women with a strong family history. So at Independence Health, we have a very robust high-risk clinic. And women at the age of 25 should be getting assessed for their risk of their lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. And if a woman has over a 20% lifetime risk of developing breast cancer, we see them in the clinic and we talk about preventative measures, and those are lifestyle things. Also, certain medications can decrease the risk of developing breast cancer by 50% or more. And we talk about the screening recommendations for early diagnosis. And like you said, women who get screened do much better overall. There's at least a 25% decrease in the death rate from breast cancer in women who get regular screening. So they're seen in the clinic. We do genetic testing, and we will tailor what they need to their own specific situation.
We're with Dr. Sharon Goldstein, Medical Director of Breast Health Center, Westmoreland Area, Independence Health System. So, Doctor, technology obviously constantly changing screening-wise in terms of, I know so many people have dealt with this. When they get a diagnosis of breast cancer, it means a lot, but it's such devastating news up front, mm-hmm. right? And then what have we done in terms of being able to treat women who are dealing with breast cancer?
So the survival rate for breast cancer has really gone way up. And in fact, for stage one breast cancer, which is an early stage breast cancer, the 10-year survival exceeds 95%. So getting screened early and finding these cancers early really is advantageous. In our centers, we have a lot of technology to assist in early diagnosis. So we do 3D mammography on every patient. We have, of course, mammograms, but also automated breast ultrasound. And that's really for women as a screening tool who have very dense breasts. We also have regular handheld diagnostic ultrasound. We do a breast MRI on women who are high risk, women who have very dense breasts, who have lesions that are harder to qualify. We can do breast MRI biopsies, stereotactic biopsies, which is a mammogram guided biopsy. Like I mentioned, we do a lot of genetic testing. And of course, people come in to see the physician and the PAs for exams.
Yeah, and it's as a doctor, obviously, it's a process of treating just the patient and family too, physically and emotionally, to support this journey.
Yeah, exactly. I always think of breast cancer as a family disease. People come into our office, they'll have their partner with them, their children, their sister, brother. And it really affects everybody. And we actually pay a lot of attention. So most of our patients are women, but about 1% of the breast cancer patients are men. But we always really look at the patient's partner, husband, whoever's with them. And we really try to address their emotional health as well, because it can be a devastating diagnosis. And people come in. A lot of our job is really reassuring people, talking them in off the ledge, letting them know what their options are and how good their prognosis is likely to be.
We appreciate the work you and your staff do each and every day. Dr. Sharon Goldstein, Medical Director of the Breast Health Center, Westmoreland Area Independence Health System, expert care here. Doc, thank you. Great information.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Keep up the great work. Yeah, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and over the years, I think it's been very powerful in the way we can get information to women in particular, obviously, but as Dr. Goldstein indicated, families too. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with our anchorman, Paul Rasmussen, and we'll continue to follow the story of Hurricane Milton. We start with CBS's Christian Vemenites in the Tampa area.
The debris that still has to get cleaned up before Milton makes landfall. County officials say that they are working around the clock to do so, but time is running out.
Strong winds and waves battered Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula overnight as Hurricane Milton barrels towards Florida's west coast.
If they have called for your evacuation order, I beg you, I implore you to evacuate.
Heavy highway traffic Monday showed that many Floridians are heeding those warnings, with a deadly storm surge as high as 15 feet forecast for some areas. Those planning to ride out the storm lined up for hours to fill sandbags.
With the last storm, we got flooded. So it's all about prepping this time.
Also to buy gasoline and dwindling supplies at stores, where some shelves are already empty.
Paper towel, water, and canned food boxes, everything. A lot of people is like going crazy buying stuff.
Residents here are still digging out after Helene struck 2 weeks ago. Now there's a race against time to remove piles of debris before Milton moves through.
We need as much of this debris picked up as possible. This creates a safety hazard.
In Tampa, staff at this zoo are rushing to secure the animals before Milton makes landfall.
We do have a lot of what we call night houses or buildings that the animals are used to going into.
The state has also set up a base camp at Tropicana Field with 10,000 beds set up for emergency workers.
This was one of the areas most impacted by Hurricane Helene's storm surge. And if the current track holds, Milton could be much worse.
CBS's Christian Vemenites in the Tampa area. So we talked about this earlier, Paul. It looks like, and they're not 100% sure exact landfall, but it makes such a big difference, even a few miles, really, north or south of where the storm will hit. Tampa hasn't had a direct hit like this, although they're still reeling from Hurricane Helene 11 days ago, and they believe this will cut through the peninsula of Florida and maintain hurricane status as it does, maybe dropping to a Hurricane 1 before it goes back into the Atlantic or into the Atlantic.
Right. That's the most recent tracking map from the National Hurricane Center shows that it hits the Florida coast at 1 a.m. now on Thursday as a major hurricane, goes across central Florida, and it's still at hurricane strength when it emerges back over open water and then down to a tropical storm as it moves away from the continent. But my concern is that this thing's, maybe we get some wind shear and maybe we get a little bit of a reduction in speed and it goes in as a Category 3 storm, which would certainly be far better than what we were looking at earlier today.
The potential even for a Hurricane 5 status. That said, as you probably have seen, all the networks are showing social media, the highways out of town for Florida residents are just jammed, bumper to bumper.
It's like a sea of red lights. You're looking from behind, and you see the brake lights, and it's just all lanes going out.
Yeah, and they've allowed people to drive on the berm just to get the people moving. And I would be concerned, Paul, if you didn't have fuel. It's been scarce in some areas to get, and then you're in these bumper-to-bumper traffic situations, you know, just adds to the anxiety level. Travel-wise, Tampa International Airport will close here in just a little over an hour, and then St. Pete Clearwater will close a little later, and then Orlando International is expected to close tomorrow at 8 a.m. And Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Jacksonville airports, as of this hour, are to remain open. So if you're traveling in that direction, it could be a challenge.
In terms of rainfall, Larry, there's a area just north of Tampa Bay, I mean, just adjacent to the Tampa Bay, physically, that could get as much as 12 to 16 inches of rain. There's a small area there. The rest is south of Tampa, not looking too bad, 4 to 6 inches, 2 to 4 inches as you go further to the south. The problem is not the rain, it's the storm surge itself, which is projected to be as high as 15 feet in some places between, say, Tampa Bay and, Bonita Beach.
Yeah, no one here could imagine a 15-foot tidal surge. Look everywhere you go today and look up and then look a little further up.
Yeah.
It's 15 feet. It's pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I saw this meteorologist last night from, I guess he's very well known down in that area. He's been there a long time, seen a lot of storms. He was getting choked up on the air just talking about the strength of the storm.
Yeah. So the storm surge, of course, will wreak havoc along the western coastline of the peninsula itself. But the other consideration that we've got to think about here is while this thing is over the peninsula, while Milton is churning away heading for the Atlantic, you know, as still a hurricane of some type, probably a one or a two at that point, I would assume. That's the kind of a hurricane that can, you know, bring a lot of power outages for a very long period of time. And it's going to be going out just above the Space Coast area from the track that we're looking at right now. So yeah, we're talking Melbourne, Cocoa Beach.
Well, right.
Daytona.
In line is Disney World.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously a huge destination every day of the year.
It's almost like Milton's going to jump on in Florida and go on I-4 across the state.
Going to follow that path. So we'll continue to bring you updates on Hurricane Milton and its powerful impact and then the aftermath. The people, though, in the south, which I'm talking about north of Florida, in Georgia, Tennessee, the Carolinas, apparently will not see the impact of this because they're still obviously reeling from their catastrophic flooding in many parts of the region, especially in western North Carolina. So we'll keep you posted on the Big K Morning Show. Coming up right after the news at the top of this hour with Paul Rasmussen, Spirit Airlines. Their first footprint here actually was in Latrobe, and they're the only real commercial airline that functions out of Latrobe. Of course, years later, they added Pittsburgh International, but Paul, as you reported last week, they filed for reorganization. So, they were considering filing for bankruptcy protection as of Friday.
Yeah, and they were dialing back their service in a number of communities, including here in Pittsburgh. Let me grab that real quick here.
Yeah, apparently part of the reason was, if you had heard, that there was a merger opportunity with JetBlue and Spirit that got shot down.
Yep. So I guess they were banking on that merger to sustain their operations. That their two routes are being dropped at Pittsburgh International, the ones that they just started flying back in the summer months to Boston and New York, LaGuardia. So the Boston-Logan service ended yesterday, and then LaGuardia will go down on November 6th. They're ending service on 32 routes in all, Larry, and it said in a statement, these schedule changes are being made to focus on their strongest performing roots. Well, that, what does that tell you? And now we have the speculation
Good
about
morning.
The Chapter
Tuesday,
11 bankruptcy
October 8th,
filing.
Larry so Richard with
the airline business, as you know, is volatile, and bankruptcies are not uncommon in that sector.
So we'll get an update on that, and more. We'll keep you posted.
Continue to keep you posted
that said,
on Hurricane
Tampa
Milton.
International Airport's going to close in less than an hour. St. Pete Clearwater closes also around the lunch hour today. Orlando International expected to close tomorrow at 8 a.m. And Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Jacksonville airports remain open as of now. If you're headed that way, definitely want to check ahead. Speaking of airports, we have an update on a story that emerged from Spirit Airlines. And joining us from the Pittsburgh Business Times, Paul Goff. Paul, good morning.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. So you can see Paul via our video at kdkradio.com on our stream. Paul, you had a story about Spirit Airlines. People remember it first coming to Latrobe Airport before it came to Pittsburgh International. What's the latest?
Well, there was a report over the weekend that they were exploring financial alternatives, including potentially bankruptcy. That hasn't happened. It's not clear whether it will, but they've got a lot of money, corporate debt due next year. And the airline business is a tough business anyway, especially the segment that Spirit Airlines is in. And they also had a failed merger with JetBlue. So they have a lot of things to kind of deal with moving forward.
Yeah, that was one of the challenges, I thought. I don't know anything about airline mergers, except that it seemed to make sense that they wanted to merge with JetBlue. What happened? Why wasn't that approved?
Yeah, they had some concerns with some potential antitrust issues, monopolizing potential routes, things like that. And also they were Frontier, another low-cost carrier, was also looking at them as well. But earlier this year, they decided to call off the merger, and JetBlue has kind of kept on flying. Spirit is trying to figure out the future without that merger.
Paul, you mentioned the fact that a lot of these routes go to Florida from here. Spirit Airlines and these low-cost carriers, have some challenge, even though we've heard the airline industry overall has been doing well and making big bucks.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a very cutthroat industry. Literally, it's a matter of dollars per seat for what could be the margin between being successful or not successful. Some of the airlines are doing better than others. And it depends a lot on, how much money they owe, their creditors and how many bills to pay.
What is the likely outcome of a bankruptcy filing, Paul? Does business continue as normal as it has with other airline bankruptcies, or is there rough travel ahead here?
Yeah, Paul, that's a good question. I think that one of the things that's potentially here is that there's no certainty that they will file for bankruptcy. They could find a way to make it work with the people that they owe money to. Obviously, those people would like to have the airline probably still fly. And it's not really clear, but I talked to officials at both Pittsburgh International Airport and also Arnold Palmer Regional Airport in Latrobe, and they think that it will not impact their operations at all, which is really what matters, right? Spirit has, I think, 11 right now, maybe 10, and will soon be 9 cities that they serve out of Pittsburgh. And then they serve 2 out of Westmoreland County. So that's an important story for either of those airlines. I mean, Spirit is the 5th biggest airline at Pittsburgh International Airport.
Yeah, that may surprise a lot of people, but overall, our airport is seeing increases in routes from a number of carriers, and that's likely to continue as they get ready to open the new airport sometime next year, right?
Yeah, I think I know that the CEO of the airport, who you've had on the show, I'm sure, is very interested in trying to keep that, what they call the ultra low-cost carrier business going. That's the Spirits, the Frontiers, Allegiance. It's also very important for Westmoreland County, because that is the only airline there. And then also it impacts other airlines or airports as well, because Southern Airways Express, which is a commuter line, I was talking to the airport manager of another airport away from Pittsburgh, and a lot of the people that use their service, it's small commuter planes coming into Pittsburgh, they're going to take advantage of the Spirits, the Allegiance, the Frontier Airlines low cost. So it's got a wide ripple effect. And I actually was really surprised by what he told me yesterday.
Well, we'll see what happens next. Appreciate the heads up. Read all about it in the Pittsburgh Business Times. Paul Goff, thank you, brother.
Thank you. Take care. Good seeing you.
You got it. Good seeing you on the radio. DACY, take us with you wherever you go. We'll keep you updated on breaking news, weather information, even our high school football game of the week coming down to the end of the regular season here in the next few weeks, and they'll be getting ready for playoffs. Playoffs, yeah, playoffs. I wanted to mention, we were just talking about the airline industry, Paul, with Paul Goff of the Pittsburgh Business Times. Did you hear what happened on Kiwanis Airlines?
The odor?
No, they apologized for having a busted entertainment system on one of their Trans-Pacific flights and then started playing adult-rated movies on everyone's screen. The pilot decided to take off and just play one movie that everyone could watch, and for some reason they chose a Dakota Johnson movie filled with enough full frontal to make everyone on board uncomfortable.
I have a report here from Deborah Rodriguez on this thing. Would you like to hear
it? Yes, please.
Here we go.
What's his name?
Passengers on Qantas flight QF59 were shocked to see the R-rated Daddy-O with Sean Penn and Dakota Johnson playing on their video screens. Parents with children were horrified when they couldn't turn the movie off or switch to something else, despite racy nude scenes. The airline blames it on a malfunctioning entertainment system. It's apologized to customers and says all screens were changed to a family-friendly movie after complaints began coming in. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
They changed to Dumbo.
Wow. Captive audience can't do a thing about that, right?
Imagine being on the flight, just settling in. You're there with your family, you know, and the movie comes on. We're sorry we don't have the individual screens. Many of the airlines have a setup where they've got an entertainment center basically built in the back of every seat so that the person sitting behind you can stare a hole through your chest in this case. Anyway,
oh boy, talk about video on demand.
Do you play the lottery ever, Paul?
Once in a while. Hey, there is a story. This is a grabber.
Yeah,
I know where you're going here.
Remember when the commercials used to say all you need is a dollar and a dream? Well, it's going to cost you $5 to buy one Mega Millions ticket.
Wow.
By next spring, the lottery is going to raise the price of the ticket by $3. So one number is $2 now, and it will be $5 in the spring. And those jackpots, which are based on a 30-year annualized payout, are going to get smaller unless Mega Million charges more, they said. So Americans don't seem ready to let go of the prospect of a billion-dollar jackpot yet, but $5 per ticket, I'm thinking that's going to knock down sales, but will it offset the increase of $3 per one number?
A report that I heard this morning about this, Larry, the officials with the lottery think that it's going to increase the number of payouts. I don't know how that works out that way, but obviously there'll be bigger prizes as well. But
is it
$5 a ticket?
Pennsylvania Lottery still protect or service senior citizens in our state?
That's the story that we're getting. Yeah,
that's what they try. That was the original sell, right?
I remember that was a tagline all the time when they would have a drawing.
Pennsylvania Lottery helps senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they do for senior citizens with the lottery money, but hopefully they're doing the right thing. I talked to Erin, our producer, earlier. She said she was in there multitasking. She felt like an octopus. And I said, funny you should mention that. Today is, who picks this stuff? World Octopus Day.
Okay.
Have you seen or heard of this documentary where a man makes friends with an octopus? Like, since the octopus was, I don't, what do you call a baby octopus, Erin? Do you know? She's busy. She's got three or four hands going different ways.
Every once in a while, you should just like put your head in their booth and yell out faster, quicker.
Let's just see if Siri knows this. Hey Siri, what's a baby octopus called?
Baby octopuses are called larvae.
Oh.
This is from uselessdaily.com.
Well, okay.
Uselessdata.com. So a baby, this guy apparently raised an octopus, and now they're good friends, and they have great hugs.
Okay.
This is the Big K Morning Show, Larry Richard with Mr. Paul Rasmussen. And as you can imagine, there's going to be a lot of focus locally on what Sarah Inamorato has to say about the budget. Speculation yesterday, it started with our own Barney Griffin about a tax increase. Sarah, if you don't know, is the Allegheny County executive now heading into the 10th month that she's been on the job. So we'll keep you posted on that, and what will it mean from a practical standpoint if you're a property owner in particular in Allegheny County?
About 46%, Marty says, increase on the millage and the outgo of the property tax assessments themselves, I guess it'd be.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
that's a big increase.
With that subject, Robin Taylor is a real estate agent with Coldwell Banker, who deals with commercial real estate, too, and with homeowners. And Robin, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
So as a real estate person, how does this story impact you, do you believe, for the future?
Well, first of all, I haven't seen the actual proposal, so I don't know what the numbers are. But what I can say is that the county portion of your taxes is very small. The largest portion of your taxes comes from the school district. So the millage rate for Allegheny County for the county taxes is 4.73. Compare that to many school districts where the millage rate is 20%. That's a small percentage. Now, nobody likes to see taxes go up. I don't like to see them to go up. Nobody does. But if it's a small increase, I think that most people won't really feel it that much.
Well, that's encouraging. It's surprising because we hear so often when you hear of a tax increase, the real impact. But the impact on property taxes isn't so much what you pay the county, it's how the school districts use that.
That's correct. So the largest portion of your taxes comes from the schools. And that bill is usually paid in July or August. And that is by far the largest portion. So if we're only talking about the county tax going up, then that's not a big portion of your bill. And quite honestly, most people probably won't even feel it unless it's a large increase. If the school district they live in raises the taxes, they're going to feel it.
So basically, what is the state of our real estate market here in Pittsburgh?
Well, it is a little slower than it was right after the pandemic. Interest rates, as you know, over the past 2 years have risen quite a bit. We were at historically low interest rates when they were around 3%. And then a year or two ago, they were up around 8%. That put a hold on a lot of buyers and sellers because it made affordability an issue. And we've also had many people who could potentially be sellers that have this rate lock effect where 80% of homeowners have an interest rate on their mortgage that is below 5%. So they maybe have a 3% mortgage and they're looking at, okay, well, I want to move, but my interest rate on my new home would go up to 7 or 8%. I'm not going to move until these interest rates go down. And so the good thing is that the Fed just lowered a key interest rate. We've seen that in mortgage rates coming down, where the average mortgage rate is about 6% right now. And so that is really encouraging to all of us who are realtors, because I think what will happen is that we will start seeing more inventory. The buyers are out there. There are lots and lots of buyers out there who want to buy homes. But we need sellers to get off the fence and actually put their homes on the market. And we think as interest rates come down, we're going to start seeing more of that. And it's not necessarily going to make homes more affordable, but we will be able to find homes, especially for young families that are really starting out and that have had a hard time in this market.
Quick question for anyone that's purchased fairly recently, even in that 6 to 7 point, even 7 point plus range, what is typically the measure to get a refi, you know, to lower your interest rate? Is it 1%? Is it 1.5%, 2%?
I would not do a refi unless it was at least 1%. Now, obviously, if you could do something at 2%, then it makes it worthwhile. So let's say you're at 7.5% and you could get something at 6. Well, that would be great. I mean, that would make sense because there are costs involved in refining a loan. And it's often, I'm just throwing out a number because it depends upon it depends on a lot of things. But let's just say it costs $5,000 to refinance. You don't want to do that unless you're making it worthwhile.
Gotcha. And with the Fed, it looks like trending to continue to lower rates. That will help in the future, too. So great information. Appreciate you jumping on with us this morning, and we'll see what happens with the Allegheny County budget.
Absolutely. We'll keep our fingers crossed that taxes don't go up much.
Robin Taylor, real estate expert with Coldwell Banker on the Big K Morning Show. So popular, we're bringing it back. This year, Pet Fest 24 is presented by Subaru, October 27th at Rockwell Park in the East End. I was there last year at a Animal Friends event, Paul. Have you ever seen that new space they redid over there in the East End area? It's really a nice setup. So this is going to be an all-day affair. Bring your four-legged friends and your two-legged friends to meet vendors, costume contests, and photos with Santa. Stop by any Subaru dealer for complimentary tickets and get details at kdkradio.com. So,
I've always wondered, is there such a thing as an uncomplimentary ticket?
Depends on what show you're going to. However, we did a thing, this was years ago, at a video place when video stores were popular, where people could bring their pets in to get a photo with Santa. And one woman brought her iguana, which didn't go well.
Mm-mm.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Poor Santa. It's 8:55.
Just let your mind wander with that little